Okay, that was 17. I thought that was a beautiful page anyway. And then she talks about parents and children on 18. I think that's pretty much what we already did on page 18. Parents fail to live their wholeness and realize substantial components. The weight of these parts falls onto the children in the form of projections. We kind of said that, right? Freud recognized that. And then she talks about the image, just page 18, go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom of the page. This situation is pictured in many myths in which the parent shuts the son or daughter into a tower or a glass mountain. Think of Rapunzel. A real, how do I want to look at this? Maybe say this. Projections are symbolized in dreams. That's her next point. As projectiles, bullets, I think to a certain extent, arrows. So watch in dreams who you're shooting at. Chances are you're projecting onto them. And pay attention to who's shooting at you, because you're probably being projected on. So she starts out on 19, the archaic identity of subject and object, which is the basis of the phenomenon of projection. Well, that's the other definition we talked about. Persists subliminally, as mentioned above, even in highly cultivated men and women. In the unconscious, the inner world and the outer world are not differentiated. Meaning, what? Why is that so important?
Whatever you're unconscious of can show up in either place.
Yeah, and if you are, let's take it easier to see maybe, if you are receiving a projection, in the unconscious, you are that projection. That's the pressure of a projection to make you become what's projected onto you.
Projection then and adaptation go kind of hand in hand, how a child adapts to life.
Yes.
Your teachers project
yep.
onto you,
yep.
the society projects
yep.
onto you, your parents, your friends,
yep.
whatever. That if you take those in as that's all that you are, then you're nothing but a conglomeration of projections.
Right. Question is then what projections are accurate to you and what are not accurate to you.
But I mean, you wouldn't be all but, I mean, you wouldn't be nothing but projections. You'd be,
right, right. Like you'd be who you truly were, but how you, if you took that on, you know, say like a Marilyn Monroe type figure, she became what was projected onto her.
Right.
She failed to see that there is something else there.
I think you can be all with projections if you have a weak enough
ego. Oh, definitely. That's what Marilyn Monroe was. She was a projection.
Didn't she call herself Norma Jean? I mean, didn't she kind of make a split between Marilyn
and Norma Jean?
Yeah,
Elton
John, when
he
wrote that
poem.
Yeah.
Was
that her original name?
Yeah. I kind of thought she did, too.
Did she?
I thought I might be wrong. So I
maybe
thought
she her friends?
Yeah, there was some awareness that, you know, one of them was kind of persona or role or whatever. I don't know. But this statement you're talking here, it's in italics. mm-hmm. in conscious, the inner world and the outer world are not differentiated. It starts out, I mean, the fact that projections happen, we don't make them, they just happen. So really when we are a child, we're growing up, it, and the unconscious mixes it all up, we can't differentiate at that point. So everything in the unconscious is A, what we projected, or B, what's been projected on us. It's all in there mixed around.
And then that's the pressure to become the projection.
I mean, naturally, everything you just naturally you would be those things until you get to a point where you become mm-hmm. conscious.
Yeah. And if they fit you, that's fine. You don't have to go this psychology route. Problem is when they don't fit you and you've become somebody else's expectation. Then the work starts. And what you might very well dream of is being shot. That projection has gone into you.
I just wonder about the self-projecting onto the human being.
We will get there. Okay. I think that's this chapter, isn't it?
All right, I'll wait till we get there.
Yeah, I brought along a dream of that. Yeah, we'll get there.
So it would be unnatural if somebody weren't up until probably 30 years old, or whenever we start really having a disturbance. That we weren't living out projections. Because up to that point, you really are unconscious.
Yeah, but I think the point is, do they fit or do they not fit?
Right.
I mean, are they causing turmoil in your life? Say, a parent who projects way too much positive on the mm-hmm. child and they have to succeed, and
right.
they're driven to succeed, then that's problematic and they have to pull back.
Mm-hmm. I can think of a positive example. One of the kids in my class used to, she's been in class now for 3 or 4 years, African American woman. Every time she'd start off, she'd say, well, I could be wrong, but every teacher said, do not start a sentence, I could be wrong, but. And now she doesn't anymore. And she puts forth her opinions with pride. But you see, the teachers were giving her a positive projection. You can do better than that. I have achieved a certain level, and you can achieve that too. So their projection had a positive effect on her. So it's not just negative, but it's when, let's say, a child says, I feel, and then the parent would say, oh, no, you don't. Then the negative instilled. And it's true, I think, you know, health can simply be that you've received positive projections and you've assimilated them. And that may not cause, you know, any deep suffering or problems of adaptation, but it could stop you from exploring the self later in life because you've been so used to getting positive feedback, you didn't have a need to look inside. And that's also, that's kind of where you're going, I think.
No, I was just thinking, well, you know, it really is, I was just saying, it's amazing that you are, that you would pull out of and become something other than all the projections that are projected on you. I mean, unless you, up to age 30, I mean, sometimes, maybe earlier, but up to that point, you really are just living projections.
Unless something magical happens. I think in some cases the self is just so strongly constellated they fall off. But that's rare. I think it can be that the self is so strongly constellated that they fall off.
Objection.
Mm-hmm.
Just naturally.
Mm-hmm. Remember the story of my that little student who was followed her small quiet voice to tell you that story? There was this, one of my, she's out of school. When I first started studying there, I got to know this one young woman, and she told me her story that she came, her dad was a steel worker in northern Indiana. And her parents said, "We can afford to pay your way through a state school. If you want to go to a private school, we'll give you that money, but then you're responsible for the rest of the money." And that's, you know, Butler's what, $45,000 now versus what's IU, 18 or 20 probably. So that's that's an $80,000 debt that she would have to assume if she went to a private school. And so she said, I asked my small, quiet voice what I should do. I said, "What?" She said, "Oh, yes, I have this small, quiet voice that I always talk to." So I asked my small, quiet voice, and my small, quiet voice said, "I want to study educational advocacy." I said, "What is educational advocacy?" She said, "Educational advocacy is what my small, quiet voice wants me to do. And I want to be involved in education, not teaching, but maybe in lobbying for education, maybe in education administration, maybe in education foundation work. And no place has a major in that, but Butler would allow me to create my own major."
Wow.
So I decided to come to Butler. I mean, by this time she was trembling, and she said, "I don't know how I'm going to pay for this." But my small, quiet voice never let me down. And she worked at Chili's, I think, one of those Mexican places. I mean, she commenced knowing a taco. And and just dragging the first 2 years. She's working, trying to, you know, make some money, and then going to school full time. And then she got a job working for the State Board of Education through a connection, one of these things. Graduated, and I just ran into her at Target the other day, and she's now working for the state. And what struck me is where all the other kids are so busy. She didn't join a sorority. I watched with other students. She was friendly, but she wasn't concerned about dating a hot guy. I met her boyfriend. He's kind of chunky. She went her own route, completely devoid of the pressures other kids follow at that age, adapting to collective projections. Somehow the self was so strongly constellated, that was a small, quiet voice, that it allowed her to do that. And she said, "You know, the girls here make me sick. They're all interested in money, and they're all interested in getting the right guy. And I found this guy I really like. No, he ain't going to make a lot of money. My roommate's got a boyfriend." And she said, "If I meet somebody with a tighter butt and makes more money, bye-bye boyfriend." So she avoided all of that stuff. That's the constellated self that just protected her against these projections, which shaped so many other people at that age. Why her? I don't know.
That's a great story. Mm-hmm. That's
a true story.
Yeah.
So, small, quiet voice. I'll never forget that.
Her parents, too. I mean,
positive parents. Positive parents. And, a factory worker. So, you see both sides. Okay. Where are we stopping? Oh, yeah. Projectiles. She reminds us of something we've already talked about, and then we'll get back to it. How projections are symbolized, and I think particularly for you, Anne, and for anyone in the medical world, this is very important.
Where are you,
Gary? No, I'm top of page 20. I just mentioned that projections are symbolized by dreams of projectiles. Then she just takes a little detour and reminds us of the fact that we mentioned earlier, that we really can't speak of projections in the strictest sense until a disturbance arises that necessitates the revision of a merely assumed perception or a judgment that has been accepted without reflection. So that's why I said a disturbance in the archaic identity between subject and object. She sort of has sprinkled that definition throughout the book. I just tried to sum it up for you at the beginning. That's kind of a detour, but now we're back to the point. Since projection, see where I am, the next paragraph, is a preconscious involuntary process independent of consciousness, it is to be expected that the process itself will be depicted in products of the unconscious, as in dreams, waking fantasies, and mythological traditions. That's what I've been saying. And how that is going to be, it is a projectile. So she skips a paragraph. Mm-hmm. One of the oldest ways of symbolizing projection is by means of projectiles, especially the magic arrow or shot that harms other people. The oldest explanation for the causes of illness to be found almost everywhere in the world is of a projectile that affects its target for good or ill. Now, why I mention that about you, Anne, I think that if a disease is a complex, it can shoot out of the diseased person onto those around them, and that you're constantly in danger of being shot by the disease, not biologically, but psychologically. And it is very dangerous. And this is just my own world according to Gary. But I think as soon as you cut open a body, something jumps out. And what jumps out is the complex behind the disease, and it comes out as a bullet, and it goes around like Mighty Mouse looking for somebody to enter. And you've got to be really careful that thing doesn't get inside you. It might be part of the reason that, you know, hospital psychology, I mean, hospital atmospheres are so toxic. It's not the disease, it's the projection being made from the psychological dimension of the disease. And there are many fairy tales where the doctor is not supposed to deal with this person. That person should be allowed to die, and the doctor avoids the voice that tells them not to help the ill patient. The doctor does so, and something in the patient attacks the doctor, and he dies. None of this has been investigated in healthcare. But you guys who are working, you know, on the front line, so to speak, are dealing with it all the time, I think. Okay.
Could we just go back for just a second to that first paragraph and talk about the disturbance that arises?
Yeah.
Could that be the self trying to manifest in the individual that causes the disturbance?
Could be. I hadn't thought of it. Could be.
I wondered if the disturbance, you know, because we have all those projections that some people go along. Like Gary said, and, you know, the college students who want the hot guy and the money and all of that, they just continue to live those projections. But at one point, a disturbance arises, and I'm wondering if that disturbance isn't caused by the self trying to manifest. Or the individual.
I think you could say that. It looks accidental, but it might not be.
Yeah, their life may look, you know, wonderful from the outside. They're, you know, they've got it all, you know, successful career, my family, whatever, but then something happens and the person is no longer filled with life energy and they fall into despair or that issue arises. I just wonder about that.
Yeah, what was that guy who faked his own suicide by jumping out of a plane?
Yeah,
did you ever see the pictures of him and his wife by their airplane?
Yeah.
Their Lexus or whatever? Mm-hmm. There's one. I mean, that guy was carrying all the projections in the world, and suddenly we realize he's a criminal, and oops, what about the projections we made onto him? But you could say was the self behind that. But that's the kind of thing where the behavior differs from what is projected. And if you have any kind of reflective mind, you will say, so what's going on? The naive point of view will just go on to the next step. And what she is talking about is we stop and say, now what of myself was I seeing in them? Why did we idealize a gangster?
Kind of following up on this, to go back even a little further, I think section 19 that starts the projection and projectile.
Yeah.
The italicized about four lines down, in the unconscious, the inner world and the outer world are not differentiated. You know, we talked about how you can start to see, you've been projecting something, you start to discriminate. But can you talk a little bit more about how that happens from the outer world? Like maybe you start having accents, or how does that process
Good.
Happen?
Absolutely. I think the thing that she's making, as I said, is that the great tendency is we think we are what we think we are the way we are seen. Mm-hmm. And then we start acting it. That's great if it's a positive, but it's not so great if it's negative. I'd say most of us who are in this room wouldn't be here if parents projected positive stuff onto us only. And we became that thing because the unconscious doesn't know the difference. I think I mentioned the play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf,
mm-hmm.
where they become would they become the way each person sees the other. Yeah.
And that's what she's calling bewitched.
That's bewitched.
That's the same as
dispassio mystique in the negative sense. And that's the same as being pierced by a bullet. All different ways of expressing the same thing. Well, I skipped over one other thing, Mike. Did I? Well, just at the middle of the page, the projection assumes a sender and a receiver. We pretty much said that, but it's nice to see it summed up sometimes. And I didn't realize, but she says near the bottom of 20, there is a relation between the German word Krankheit and the Kranken, the double dots means the A gets longer. Kranken, but it's the same root, to hurt or to wound. Now, the projection of the self. Do you want to say something, Kathy? Or are you just voicing a question?
Yeah, I was just voicing that question to see where she goes with that. Even though I've read this three times, you just get so much out of what she
did. I was trying to see, where does she talk about the dream of the guy with the blue eyes? Is that here, or is that later?
Might
be the next chapter. It probably is the next chapter. Well, what she's doing, she's continuing this idea of the projectile and how we get infected by it. But she introduces this idea here, and she will follow up on it later, that the unconscious projects on us. I thought I'd bring you a dream. I haven't seen many dreams like this, but I brought a dream which we use in the intro course to give you an idea how that looks.
The intro course of what?
Oh, Jung, that I do now and then. What else would I be teaching?
I mean, like, is this one that, is this through just one that you do?
Yeah, just a small intro. This is a woman who was addicted to pleasing other people. Slowly through our work, that was seen and corrected. About the time she was seeing through that. This is the dream she had. I'm visiting a community college. Sorry, I'm visiting a college community. There are coffee houses, gift stores, bookstores. I am in a coffee shop, and a man comes over to talk with me. Here's the important sentence. He thinks I am someone else. So part of her is projecting another image of who she is onto her. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy, but that's what the conclusion we have to reach if we work with these dreams. He thinks I am someone else. When I tell him he has mistaken me for another person, he becomes very angry and hostile. The dreamer then tells him off, finds a sympathetic woman with whom she discusses her future professional plans, and at the end of the dream discovers that a certain aunt's body has been exhumed from the cemetery. And the aunt was a person who spoke her mind.
Oh, wow.
So that's what got him, her, thinking about these complexes project on us. Now, that's not the self, and this is a negative projection, but we have to say, apparently, the self projects onto us as well. I have no idea where to go from there, but they're simply following what we know from dream work to its logical conclusion.
Okay, so you're saying the unconscious projects onto the ego?
Apparently.
The ego.
This is as new to me as it is to you.
But we're unaware of it. And that's what happened with Job.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
Or, I mean, I guess that's what she's implying here, is that right?
With Job, you say?
Where are you in the book?
Yeah, on page 21.
Oh, you're back to the book.
Well, I'm just, I mean, you're extrapolating
yes.
from this dream.
Right.
All right. So, when Yahweh projected onto Job his harmful arrows.
Yes, indeed.
And it caused not only psychological events, but also Job's physical
yes.
plague.
I admit it's a new thought, but apparently it's a conclusion we have to reach.
Well, not so. I mean, it makes sense in terms of, you said the self, via projection, the self is,
mm-hmm.
or the theological spirit of yeah. the self is trying to move us forward in our developmental process.
Yeah.
And they can that spirit can cause projections out here in this reality, but also
apparently also inside, behind the scenes, apparently.
We would get a glimpse of that through our dreams. And
yeah. Like, well, again, I say I've never seen that. If I have, I've missed it. The self doing this in dreams, but here you can see where the dreamer intercepted that projection. Common speech would say, well, this woman has adapted to unrealistic standards. That's the common way of putting it. But the dream says, no, there's a dream figure in her thinking she is somebody else, projecting another identity onto her.
But would that dream figure be, I mean, I would think, I was thinking at first the animus, because
that's the animus,
male,
yeah.
But then I was thinking, well, that's an interject of maybe her.
Could very well be. But I think we could also say that collective images would do the same thing. And then it gets much more complicated. Why? What's the nature of it? How do we recognize it? I think you'd recognize it in the same way, that you'd see a divine figure trying to shoot you and you'd take cover, or a divine figure trying to define who you are, and you'd say, no. No, I'm not that.
Well, this one would wasn't divine. This is just an ordinary man.
Yeah, but here in Job, I mean.
Oh.
And what Job basically does to God is what the woman did to the animals. Job says to God, I am not guilty.
As this woman said to
him, yeah, she said, I am not this man. I am not who you think I am.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And Job is saying, yeah, I am not who you think I am.
And
didn't
Jung say that to Salome?
And Jung said it to Salome, absolutely. You know, I told you that tragic story of the young woman I met whose little baby died. And she said, well, she was Hindu. She said, well, you know, she said, Krishna willed this. Krishna willed this.
Oh.
This is God's will. See, she's buying the negative projection. And she was of course she would be sad, but she was horrendously demoralized. She said, I don't think I could have another child again. Mm-hmm. That's when you don't stand up to, in that case, I guess you could say, to the negativity of fate. It, to me, it means we have to reevaluate all our theology. Nothing that I know of in theology deals with this.
We talk a lot about what we project onto God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about what God is projecting onto us.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why answer to Job is so important.
Mm-hmm. We should study that next.
We did once, but I can always do it again. It's tough.
We studied it in for another. A negative projection. And then you withdraw it.
Previous life projection. And, you know, you see how angry this man got. You can be sure that those who believe in that God get equally angry. I gave a talk on, remember they had the Blake, Job, at the Art Museum, I gave a talk there.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's what, 3 or 5 years ago, I don't remember. But it's sad. I had some Orthodox Jewish friends who came, and their faces were beet red. I've never heard from them since. Just the fury of questioning that. I'd have to say myth. Yeah, you can see the rage it releases.
Wait, I'm not getting what you're saying.
I gave a talk on Answer to Job, uh-huh. And some Orthodox Jewish friends were there,
uh-huh.
And they got furious.
Uh-huh.
And his face, he was sitting in the back, his face was literally beet red. I'm just thinking like this. Having him shoot me or something.
Well, you perceived that was because they thought you were saying God was only a projection?
No, that God had an evil side. And,
oh, the evil part.
Yeah, I think it was the evil side. Yeah. And because, see, they're still living, that God is right and Job is wrong. So like my Hindu friend would say, I deserve what happened to me. Or there's a God knows better. And boy, as soon as you say no, God doesn't, people just go bonkers.
Tears the foundation out from under.
Everything, yeah.
But on the other side of that, when we were doing Job, it was toward the end, and I was blown away with that concept. And I just happened to meet a friend, an artist friend of mine, and we went out to coffee and talked about Yahweh, the two sides of Yahweh, and she was totally amazing. She said, how do you believe?
See, this was an Orthodox Jew.
Okay, this was not. She's progressive, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the milk and the meat, you know.
Yeah, when you read that, because I did that one time with my family. about World War One and Two, and the evil side. It's like, you're either Christian or you're not.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was actually the end of that conversation.
I think it's we're almost seeing two epochs here. Those who can see this and those who can't. Because if you think of a war now in the Middle East, there's two sides saying God says. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's going on.
And Carol's picture. That snake coming up. Just to me, that image just says it all about.
Well, on the way over here, I was listening to NPR, and there was a Muslim guy talking about that, and how it felt like something just rose up in them all.
Maybe you should bring the picture next time. Or do you not want to share it?
Yeah, I can. I can bring it.
If you feel like
it. A reproduction of it.
Okay. Just a thought. Because it really is the breakdown of a world, I think. And we think we're so advanced theologically, but we're not. I don't believe.
And you know, when Jung wrote Answer the Joke, it was like right after his heart attack, so something hit him.
Yeah.
Physically and psychologically. Yeah. And then he said, it was like I could not do it.
Yeah.
And he was just forced into writing that. Mm-hmm. The Damon got a hold of him. And, mm-hmm. and to me, that speaks to. That spirit was wanting him
absolutely.
To be brought out and
said. Mm-hmm. I may have mentioned it's the only book he wrote he was completely satisfied with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know, of course, I was looking for these things, but when we did some of the other seminars, you could see him kind of sit on people who said, sacrilegious things. And you can see how he changed his own attitude toward that. Mm-hmm. Even said the one guy, I forget which seminar it was in, but no, you shouldn't blaspheme God.
Jung said that
guy? Yeah. Well, Job is pure blasphemy. So he himself grew, I think, into that realization. If you're confused, you're in good company. Bottom of 21, it is more difficult to understand the errors of a God or of God as representing projections. And then she goes on and gives some examples. I don't know if we need to do all the examples or not. So that's sort of a detour. And then she comes back to her point of projections again in a more general sense. The middle of 22. Today we know that sharp, jabbing forms and drawings of patients indicate evil, wounding, destructive impulses that stand in the way of a synthesis of a personnel. Okay, another detour on 23, which will take up a lot in the next chapter. I alluded to earlier when we started today, that we can now recognize, Saturn is a projection. What the Greeks were doing with Saturn and Artemis are projections of complexes. Just be aware of that, hold that, because we'll return to that idea in the next chapter.
Relating those to the archetypes, then?
Right. Yeah, we can now say, that's a projection of archetypal factors. That's how she starts the next chapter. And then she goes from there. And back now, remember we said that she initially talked about projections as being integrated into the ego, and yet there are some projections where we don't say they're integrated into the ego, they're integrated into the self, or they're seen as belonging to the self. That would be factors in us, which we learn, get to know, our inner figures, which we have to serve. And that's what she returns to on 24. When an archetype is immediately in the middle of the page, intensively constellated, the experience is like being hit by a projectile sent by an overpowering being that transfixes us and brings us into its power. That's what we've been saying. Now, look at the italicized quote, but enter that paragraph. Ultimately, however, it appears that projections always originate in the archetypes and in the unconscious complexes. So she brings us back to the fact that what we project are archetypal powers which cannot be integrated into the ego. This is where she talks about the fact that the next paragraph, about the blue-eyed guy, where the dream figures in us have an autonomous life that project onto us. The dreamer, the inner figure says, you have romantic, dreamy blue eyes. And the fact is that the dreamer did not.
You know, as you were talking about things that are integrated into the ego and into the self, and the ones integrated into the self are ones you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also your inferior functions and your...
Yes. Inferior function, the self, the anima, animus. See, the shadow can be integrated into the ego, anima, and self. Inferior function, not.
But not the whole shadow, because there's part of the shadow.
The personal shadow. So like the rope would be the personal shadow. Maybe we'll do one last point, then we'll stop, and we'll pick up subjective and objective level next week. Just that, in a way, what we've already said, second paragraph on 25, projections produce ego insecurity. You know, what? Am I really that bad? Do I really do that? Is that really the kind of person I am?
I think if we ask those questions, then you can start that process, that 5 or 6 step process of
right.
Drawing them. So in a way, it's like doubt. You know, once doubt comes in, if you engage that doubt consciously, you can come to a fuller understanding of yourself. So that this ego insecurity may be meant to just destabilize for a moment so that you can grow.
Or just so it's not too strong
right.
And you can't bounce back.
And that gets back to how much to put in your boat, right?
How much to put in your boat and how strong you are.
And yet, we all know people who have no ego insecurity whatsoever and should have a little bit.
And should have.
Well, there comes our feeling, our judgment capacity. I mean, you know, most people would see this as bad, to be unsure.
Yeah.
Whereas others would say, that's not so bad. That's
I think
damn good.
Ultimately, it's the sign of openness that you can receive this stuff, you can get confused, and then you can say, okay, what's going on? Because it could be the projection is right. Or it could be that it's way off. And if it's right, even if it is right, let's suppose a jerk calls you a jerk, and you were behaving in an unsatisfactory way, you need to be able to understand that. But you also need to get ready for the next swing of that person who will call you a jerk again, even though you're not. But if you defend yourself against all of that, you'll never be able to receive feedback. So it is what you said it is. Being able to be open and then process is really, I think, a sign of maturity.
And just think how much, I mean, if the politicians had an ounce of that,
how
much more would you get across?
A milligram of that.
You know.
Yeah.
because now today is exotic.
Vicious.
Way
out. Vicious. Well, last paragraph, and then we'll pick up subjective and objective next time, but which I think practically is one of the hardest parts of this work. But let's just look at the last paragraph of 25 before that. Small wonder that one needs a long process of maturing and a good bit of self-knowledge before coming to a relatively constant ego identity and moderate level-headed estimate of oneself. The attribution of a psychic content in another person's imagination to one's own being, or its rejection as the other's projection, is an occasion not only for critical thinking, but also for a feeling evaluation. It can therefore never be managed purely intellectually. That's a lovely paragraph, too, I think. And again, you know, I'm always looking for how people put things in different words. A projection would be the attribution of a psychic content in another person's imagination to one's own being. It's a very good definition of projection. So we will easily finish the chapter next time. And why don't you read chapter 2? Part of chapter 2 we'll skim because she gets into amplifications. I don't think we need to worry about every last one. So we'll go for the main ideas. And so at some points you'll see we go quick. Some place we'll slow down and go very slowly. I don't know we'll get through chapter 2 next time. We may or may not, but read it anyway. It's not that long. I think we have two more meetings.
So you're saying read chapter 2 and 3?
No, just 2. Just two.
Just two more, you said? Two more meetings?
I think two more meetings.
Two.
Is that right?
Two.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the last one.
Me too.
Okay. Okay.
Your friend just asked a question. I'm 25. Up at the top, she says, it's an five lines down, it's an additional conscious complex who can pass such projections onto our ego, as the new above three shows. This can lead to a further source of mistaken judgments about the ego, or by the ego about itself. So she's saying then that these unconscious complexes also cast projections.
Like here, this guy. Yeah. This woman thought she had to please everybody. The dreamer we talked about. Pardon? Oh, I'm not sure. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I can see how, like Daryl says, you have a positive projection and that can lead you forward. I guess I'm a little more unclear on how negative projections can lead you forward, because they seem like they always lead you backwards.
Well, they try to, but if you understand them, I think that knowledge might be more accurate to say that knowledge leads you forward.
Harder for me to picture. Might be part of my own
God. Maybe.
Well, that makes the question of what's positive and what's negative.
Yes. There are all kinds of questions, aren't there?